I would like to cover some basic material, which I'll cover anyway. But I also like to know if you got any particular thing that you would like to have explained, or any particular problem, or any axe to grind, you see, any question about the navigators, or any why this, or why that, or why don't we have people volunteer for the shuttle ride, or anything, you know, anything. So, Doug, if you will take one and start there, and Doug, if you will give these to Ken, since I can't get up, I'm tied down. If you'll give these to my wife, and then...
John?
Yes?
Up at OSU, we've got a lot of navigators already in space.
I'm going to say you didn't leave us much room to complain.
Mary, that's part of the design. That's part of the design. We want 3x5 complaints, not 8.5x11 complaints. Yeah. Now, Ken, if you'll fish me my gear there. Thank you. Won't you just take a minute, in case you have any problem. If you don't have any problem, or any question, or any... It doesn't have to be a negative problem, you know. But anything you'd like to ask. You staff members can do the same thing, too, if you want to. I mean, it might be your opportunity. For your staff members' benefit, I have found out that you do get more when you retire than you do when you're on staff. So, in case you want to ask that, I'll answer that for you. I wasn't able to get that. But I did find out that you get more.
Well, I'm working my way through retirement.
Oh, you really?
I retired from the government in '80, and I've gone back to work.
Okay, take a moment and write that down. You can just keep writing if you want to, and I'll start here. Bruce Doss assigned this topic. He says, this elective is to give the folks a good overall insight on just who the navigators are and what our vision is. But in addition to that, I feel we would have a great opportunity to try to recruit them to the vision. I hope to get all first-timers or people who haven't been exposed to navigators to this elective. Just who the navigators are and what our vision is. Actually, it's quite simple. But in order to give you somewhat of a background, I'll give you just a little bit of Dawson Trotman's testimony in life I heard Doss give his testimony a number of times, and you perhaps have read much about his testimony. He was born in Bisbee, Arizona, and he was saved through the prayers of Miss Mills and Miss Thomas, his junior high teachers. You perhaps have read that in the book Doss and heard him tell about it in the Born to Reproduce. Are you familiar with the little booklet, Born to Reproduce, or the tape? There's a good tape. Mary, have you ever heard that at all?
No.
The book? Well, we have tapes in the library. Born to Reproduce is a tape by Doss. It can give you a good background. When Dawson was saved, he had a real burden to know the Lord through the Bible. Miss Mills and Miss Thomas had given these young people 10 verses on the gospel to memorize. They had memorized them. Many of those verses are in our topical memory course today. Other people use them as well. The fact of sin, Romans 3:23. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. The penalty of sin, the penalty must be paid. It's paid by Christ, a free gift and must accept. Then they thought, if these young people memorize these 10 verses on salvation, we'll give them 10 verses on growing in Christ or assurance. Verses like 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things have become new. And as ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in him. Now, I tell you this because what Miss Mills and Miss Thomas, two maiden lady school teachers, had on their heart and the thought process that they went through affects you today. They hammered out some basic things that you don't have to hammer out, and I'll show you in a moment. But they already hammered out. Salvation, growth. Salvation, growth. And they made it synonymous like bread and butter. Bread and butter. Bread is a different item than butter, and butter is a different item than bread. Or you could have bread and jam. But they go together quite well. And we use them together quite well. And so, when Dawson was saved, he decided, because the 20 verses he had on his heart gave him such a blessing, he would continue to memorize. So he continued to memorize a verse a day for the next few years. So the next 3 years gave him 1,000 verses. Well, 1,000 verses then or now makes a person a threat. If he's warped out of shape and in some cult, man, he's a tiger. If he's in a fundamental church like you and I go to, he's still a tiger. If he's on track, he's a tiger. If he's off track, he's a tiger. Because there's power in knowledge. And he knew so much because he could quote the scriptures. And he happened to know the context as well. This gave him a start. Now, in God's providence, in God's grace, he put Doss in contact with some older men down in Long Beach and down in Los Angeles, the Fisherman's Club. He went down, and Doss was 21, and he went down, and these fellows were in their 30s and 40s and 50s, and they were also winning souls and helping people. And in fellowship with these older people kept Doss from going off track more than he did. And the lessons that he learned in those early days we still practice today, which gives us our philosophy. One being, we like a mixture of people in a team, in a group. We like chronologically older and younger. We like spiritually older and younger. Because this gives a balance. It seems that if we don't have new converts coming along, wild herd bunny rabbits, our group, our ministry gets a little bit stale. You've experienced that already, right? So many times the church, you know, saved, sanctified, baptized, and petrified, you know, and it was that way 40 years ago when Paul went, you know. But these new people, well, Doss would hammer away on that. And then in these early days came the word balance. He found out through experience that as he led a man to Christ, and as his buddies that he recruited led a man to Christ, they would talk afterwards, and they said, they'd talk about, well, what'd you give your guy? Well, when I gave my guy John 5:24. Another one said, well, boy, my guy, he just didn't believe he could hold out. Man, he just said, I just can't hold out. I can't. So I gave my guy 1 John 1:9. 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins. John 5:24, verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life. See? And everyone would come up with some question, like, well, my guy, man, he's got a church background that believes that you work for your salvation. And man, I'm telling you, he was a tough nut. I gave him Ephesians 2:8-9. And we went over it. And he memorized it. For by grace are you saved through faith, not of yourselves. It is a gift of God, not of works, as men should boast. So Doss said, hey guys, I think we got something here. Why don't we make up a little kit? Now we fellas can handle it, but the guys that we're trying to recruit and get going don't have our background, our zeal, our knowledge, our experience. Why don't we make up a little kit and brief a guy so when old Doug goes out on a team with us, out on the street, down in the mission where they were working, down on the pike at Long Beach, the amusement center, he'll have something if he can witness to a guy, and if he makes a commitment, he'll have a little kit. So the forerunner of the beginning with Christ came from that experience. He came out of necessity. Came out of necessity. This is one of the greatest little gems that I know about in my type of Christendom. Now, I don't know about all Christendom. I know about my part of it. In my brief span here on earth and roaring around and to and fro and up and down, this little gem right here. Why would you say this little gem, those of you who are familiar with this, would be such a powerful little tool?
Something you put in your hands.
Tangible.
Tangible.
Okay. What else?
The five things seem to be basic to everybody. They come to those five
things that seem to be basic to everybody.
Sooner or later.
Pete, that's a fantastic truth that it, you see, when Mr. Kennedy was in presidency, Jacqueline, they had a baby. That same year, wetbacks were coming across the border and having babies over on this side so they'd be born in the United States. Probably couldn't speak any English. Did you know that Mr. Kennedy graduated from Harvard? His baby and the wetback's baby need the same thing. And PhDs out of our finest seminaries seem to forget that. Now that's the philosophy of the navigators. Philosophy of the navigators is just, you know, it's so simple. All babies need the same thing. All babies need the same thing. And so, there's any other reasons why this is so potent?
It's simple.
Simple.
Do it with them.
Right. Another reason.
It's truth.
Sir?
Truth.
It's truth.
In other words, you're
closing
people
to truth. Yeah. And one of the reasons, another reason is, Ken can take a Gideon Bible and a pencil and go to the nearest coffee shop and witness and lead a man to Christ. He'll use a napkin or have the waitress bring him a brown paper sack. But Ken's men have to have a little bit more help than that because they're not an old warrior. So with this little item, we can equip a guy. See, with a simple track, peace with God track, and this, and a Gideon King James New Testament, we can equip a guy. You see, now that is the philosophy of the navigators. We got our quota of seminary grads, no problem. We got our quarter of advanced degrees. No problem. We don't have any problem with that. We don't have any problem with that. But the seminary grad and advanced degrees is not going to be in the belly of a ship, not going to be in a construction crew, not going to be in the wheat harvest, not going to be in the office with the geologist. So we want to equip a man with basic material, basic thought pattern, that he can be effective in the marketplace. That is the philosophy of the navigators. Questions up to now? Comments?
John, why do people not, even, you know, we introduced that in the nav ministry, we introduced that with couples that you work with, and you've had the same experience that we have. Why don't they believe us to use it and pick it up? Is it too simple, like John suggests? And they're suspect of it? Or?
What do you think, gang? What do you think?
It's not flashy.
I mean, they get there eventually.
Spectacular.
Yes?
People today in America want the spectacular. You know, you got bigger and better and...
We got our resident engineer here. I love it.
Those are
yeah, you got it. You gotta believe it, huh?
Those are heaters.
Yeah. Questions, team? Comments?
Well, to me, it seems like, you know, if anybody's ever had a taste of this stuff. You know, the little five verses.
Yeah.
And the will and the hand, and they've had any success in it. If they've had a taste of it, then, and there's been success, then they're gonna want it. They can't help but be excited about it and want to use it.
One of the things, perhaps, that we make a mistake is we forget the basic truths. The basic truths is that God's going to use a person. This material that I have in my hand is some recorded ideas, but God's going to use a person. Now, when I gave out the beginning with Christ, see, I'll give it like with Doug here, and we will read every word, and I will draw Doug out. It takes me a long session, like an hour, to give out a beginning with Christ. I'd rather have two. And if I don't get through, then we'll break over here and I'll help Doug memorize a verse. And then we'll finish it up the next time. You see? Then Brooks, Philip Brooks, had some studies, some study books that we used for years and years and years because they were close enough to what we wanted. Then we started developing our own, see? But if we could get this idea into the hands of a churchman or a churchwoman, see? Assurance of salvation. A sixth grader could go through this, not having gone through it before, and go through this with another person. It's that simple. Assurance of salvation. Go right on through and the bridge and fill it out and to talk about it. With this simple philosophy approach, we can equip dozens upon dozens upon dozens of laborers. Now then, what is the object of the navigators? The object of the navigators is to equip laborers for the harvest. Period. You can turn that any way you want to. You can turn it upside down. But that is all there is to it. That's all there is to it. These are tools and skills that we use to equip laborers for. We don't have the best tools or the most tools. We have some tools. The Navigators is a group of fellows and girls banded together for the purpose of raising up laborers for the harvest. Period. Okay? Questions on that? Or comments?
Would you say to make God known to the world?
Yes, that's a byproduct, Mary.
Byproduct?
Yes. Of the navigators. That's the job of the church.
I think that's the job of an individual.
Yes, that's the job of an individual, as he is as part of the church. But in the navigators, we have become tough-minded with gritted teeth like this, with jaw muscles like this. We're going to do one thing. Now, we do a lot of other things, individuals, like, you know, witness and go on crusades and so on. As individuals, we do a lot of things. Baptize, preach a revival, anything, as individuals. But as navigators, we only do one thing, Mary. That's all. One thing. One thing. And that makes it so simple. That means we work with Catholics, Presbyterians, Christian Church, Episcopal, Methodist. Because you see, our job is to raise up laborers. Now, I do a lot more than that. I teach fellas how to handle a budget. Ken teaches fellas how to witness. You say, well, isn't handling a budget and witnessing part of labor? It sure is. It sure is. It sure is. But we're not going to put up a school on how to handle a budget or a school on evangelism. We'll help these other guys. But we are laborer producers. There's a lot of NAV staff that through the years haven't been able to buy that. Well, fine. Do something else. If you don't labor it, get your job driving a truck. Both honest work. See? Questions?
John, how do you define a laborer?
Sir?
What's a laborer?
What is a laborer?
That's an
expert. But you know what you could ask. Okay, class, help me. What is a laborer? Pardon me?
A person who works in the harvest.
A person who works in the harvest? Very good.
Someone who teaches another person how to disciple someone.
Someone teach another person how to disciple someone? Very good. Very good. Strong back, willing to follow a foreman. Very good. Very good.
Another person who's doing what we're doing.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, in the construction business, your common laborer was generally the hardest working man on the job. He had the hardest job. His job no one else wanted to do.
That's the least credit. And
it's less paid and least paid. So now,
I think I hear one outside.
So, Pete, as we keep going, we've mentioned various things, but there's one thing that comes through to all of these definitions of what a laborer is. What is that?
Work.
Work. And he's active. Work and he's active, isn't it? So if you've got people in your fellowship, in your church, what have you, that's not working, it's not active, they're not laboring. They're not deacon. Materials have been developed through the years because of a need, primarily. In the, just before World War II, Collier's Magazine wrote an article on the Navigators, and it came out in the fall, September, October, someplace in there, November, someplace in there, before Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor in December. And a lot of people still had that magazine on their desk, and a lot of parents, and so they encouraged their sons to look up the Navigators. During World War II, we had developed to the point that what we would call a disciple maker of sorts today, 1,000 men on different ships and stations throughout the world, and another 1,000 men in the Army and Army Air Force. So we're working about 2,000 men who were workers at that time. After the war, while these fellows got out and went back to college and went to their jobs, many of them trained for the mission field. This NAV staff was quite small before the war, probably a dozen or so. Then after the war, it would dwindle down to even less than that. When I came aboard, there was probably 15 to 20 staff on the Navigators. There's 2,600 now. I remember we had a conference in Forest Home, 86 of us, just after January, February of early part of 46. And we thought, man, this ain't getting big, you know. It was 86. Doss had his offices in Los Angeles downtown by the Bible. Biola was downtown. And he had his offices down there primarily because he wanted to be in the mainstream of that type of Christianity. So Doss had no idea, he had no intention of getting off by himself. From start to finish, it was not in his thinking, but in the mainstream of Christianity, of fundamentalist Christianity, see? The mainstream was his start from start to finish. I was there, and I heard him say so. And I watched him, and it was true. And he didn't want us to be, the showcase. He wanted us to help other people because we had no intentions of becoming a church. The only intention was laborers then and now. I remember we bought a little office building out at Eagle Rock. It was a warehouse, a concrete block building, 2,600 square feet. My house is 2,550, so... and then one of my jobs was to refurbish that office building, which we did. And before we got it completed, of course, we had outgrown it. And I remember one day Dawson telling me that, boy, John, our budget's $2,000 a month. Roy was already overseas. Bob Hopkins, I believe, was overseas. George Clark was overseas. They went overseas because they had the GI Bill and they got $50 a month, and that $50 a month virtually took care of a lot of their expenses in France and in Germany in those days. Single men, see? We received $11 a week in money when it was there, and board and room. And most all the girls in the main office lived at the big house. You've seen a picture over in Pasadena at, in 509 Monterey Road, and we fellas lived with Lawrence Sanny over in San Pasquale. Roy went overseas in 49, and then in those days after we got out, we began emphasizing our fellows going to colleges, primarily state colleges, because we figured that that's where they could have their evangelistic opportunity. And it seemed like our guys fit state colleges rather than the Christian colleges at that particular time. I remember when Dr. Graham asked Doris to come with him, and it was at the Fort Worth Crusade, and Dawson said, Billy, I have NAV reps I haven't seen in 6 months, and you want me to come and give you 6 months out of my year? And he said, I can't do it. And Billy kept calling him, and he said, Doss, I can't sleep at night, wondering what's happened to all these people that come forward to make commitments. Would you come visit us and give us some suggestions? And Dawson said, Billy, get somebody else. And Dr. Graham wrote back or called and said, or something, said, great, great idea, Doss. Who? Give me an idea. Tell me who to get and I'll try to get them. So Doss went. And that's where we got started with the Dr. Graham crusade. And previous to this, Dawson, in 39, he rode a chair car from Los Angeles to Wheaton because we had three navigators there. John Streeter, Johnny Thorne, I forgot the other man. And he rode 3 days there and 3 days back to visit these guys because they were having a problem adjusting into college out of the military. And while they were there visiting, they said, Doss, hey, we got a young man here we want you to meet. So this tall, skinny kid came up, and they introduced him, and he said, son, he says, in the conversation, how's your quiet time? And he said, Mr. Troutman, I don't have a quiet time. And Dawson's heart was really attached to this young man. His name was Billy Graham. And that was their first meeting, you see. But Dawson saw in Dr. Graham a certain quality of integrity and of honesty and looking right straight at him, and, you know. And this is when he was drawn to him. 53, Dr. Graham was going by Glen Eyrie. You probably read that story. And built an academy. But his constituents began to write him and said, look, if you're going to build an academy, count me out, because I'm interested in evangelism and I want my money to go to evangelistic work. So he decided, well, maybe this is a God that we don't. So he gave us the option, and you can read about that. Doss died in 56, and Lorne took over, and in 30 years of progress. The philosophy of our work has always been manpower. We've never intended to do anything else. In 62, we had a meeting over at the lodge, and at that time, the general consensus was that we should start training more NAV staff. And so the big push on and building a larger organization was from that time, 1962. Up until then, we had just been rather skimpy on staff and sent most of the fellows to and girls to other ministries. Property, in those early days, we had Nav Home. We'd buy great big old homes, and under the name of the Navigators, and have guys in there and girls and train them. And that was our training center, and then we used this for our training center. And then Jerry Bridges, Dr. Bridges, began to see that our staff was going to be old sometime. We were in our 30s in those days, and, you know, sell the farm and hit it, you know, and no insurance and not much of anything. And he could see 25, 30 years down the road, we're going to have a bunch of old, poor people we're going to have to do something with. And so he began to preach and teach and help. Hey, you kids should really start buying your own homes. And I was against it, of course, against my better judgment, only to find out later that it was the right decision. I have told Jerry that I was wrong and he was right. So that's all clear. That's marvelous, really. So we've sold off the old Nav homes. And another thing this helped us with, we got out of the property business. The only property, far as I know, that we have is Glen Eyrie. They may be a bit in pieces. Do you know of any, Pete, at all? We may have one home in Texas yet, or is that sold, or do you know?
One in Nairobi.
One in Nairobi. We had one in Korea, but that's another story.
I think there's one in Ohio.
Is it? Yeah. But we've virtually gotten out of that, and that has been a tremendous blessing.
John, didn't that change, though, the style of ministry?
I'm sorry?
Didn't that change the style of ministry?
Yes, it changed the style of ministry, Pete. Yes, it did.
But there's still a need for that?
Yes, Pete, there is still a need for that. There is still a need, and by the way, by the nature of things, it seems like we go as far as we can till we hit the bulkhead, and then we bounce off and, you know, I mean, we get to recruiting, helping people with the follow-up and disciple-making, and pretty soon we hadn't been out witnessing in weeks, months, year. See? Then we think, what we got to do, boys, get the evangelism back. So we've been hitting evangelism, you know, and pretty soon we've got so many people and we don't even know where they are, you see? I don't know. Helen and I, we've finally got around to, thanks to some of you and others, to buying our own home as young people. I was 62 when I bought my first house. But we have a four-bedroom house for the purpose of, as our two children leave, and one of them's already left, having people with us, and we have two lovely young people with us. Pete sent us a mighty fine guy a few years ago, Byron Black, and now we've sent him back with addition.
Yes. Yes.
You can thank me for that. My wife, rather. So we have two of the finest people in the world living in our home. And just in passing, most of the folks that live in our home have wound up in our ministry in some way.
Can't imagine that.
Well, I mean, right here, Francis Cosgrove, you know, Russ Reed, Harvey Cox, Jack Blanch, ad infinitum, Hank, Don Hankins, and their wives, and some fellows who decided to go into the pulpit type ministry. We were naming them the other night, and then we began to lose track, you know. But as far as we know, two we thought we had lost in sin, only to find out that they got right with God after they left us, got married, raised a family, and was on the East Coast, had their home open for disciple making. you know. Well, any other questions at all? 12 o'clock.
You want a 3x5?
Yes, I want you 3x5. I do want to get over that we are where we are because of philosophy and a definite thought pattern. It didn't just happen. Why are we in Colorado? Because then there came available? Nope. We looked for property in Colorado. By the way, we had an option on the place, the airport, the Air Force Academy has now. See? Why did we call? Do you know why we moved to Colorado? Anybody know why we moved to Colorado? Essentially located. That was a factor, but it wasn't the big factor. It'll blow you away.
Good.
Sir? Good
weather.
Good weather. And good weather what?
For skiing, I don't know.
You can work long hours.
Oh.
Dawson said, he did some research, he says it's cool. It's cooler in the summer, not unreasonable in the winter. And he said we can work longer hours and get more out of our day than any other place he knew of. He looked at Switzerland, he looked at Britain, he looked at the West Coast and East Coast, and he figured it at Colorado. You have over 300 days of sunshine right here in Colorado Springs.
Probably didn't even think about Texas.
Hey, do you like that, kids? Do you like that? Do you like to know that your heritage comes from actual thought pattern? See, thinking it through. It didn't just happen. Please comment on how you view the NAV's interrelationship with the church. I love that question. How do I view the carburetor on a car? How do I view the transmission on a car? Tires? How do I view the tires on a car?
Part of the car.
Part of the car. How do I view the gearbox on a car?
Part of the car.
Yeah. This is part of the church. You say, well, if the church was doing the job, would you need the navigators? Well, I don't know. If the car was doing the job, would you need the carburetor? I don't know. Maybe they'll find something sometime that no need to call. I don't know. See? No? No. Why? The kid says, why do I need to eat salad, Mom? Mom has every right to say, why don't you need to eat salad, son? It's just as for the goose, it is for the gander. See, he has that other question. Now, if you get into Christmas and New Year's, that'll give you problems, you know. As far as from here to Pueblo, it is Pueblo to here. But Christmas and New Year's, that don't work. You know, it's a year from New Year's to Christmas, but it's only a week from Christmas and New Year's. So don't use that in that. But other than that, see, yeah. You can always use that back to front. But most of the time, you can't. So I view, see, I have never had a problem with my church. I've been a member of the First Baptist Church in Berkeley. Valley Baptist, College Avenue in San Diego, Evangelical Free downtown, Baptist Church in New Zealand, Southern Baptist Church in Oklahoma City. You're not supposed to say what I'm going to say now. My pastor said, when I think of John and Helen, I think of Mr. and Mrs. Hospitality. So help my life, Ken. We don't show up but 50% of the time. Why would my pastor call us? We do bring folks to church. But why would, if we're not there but 50% of the time, why would he call us Mr. and Mrs. Hospitality? Sir?
Yes, your friendly.
Hospitality meaning because we bring people to church and have them over to our house for dinner. And we're only church 50% of the time. Why would he call us Mr. and Mrs. Hospitality? kind of like a rose. So if you're not number one kid in your church, I can help you. You see, but John, I got all this other to do. You can still do twice as much as the other cobblers.
You say at the same place every Sunday and always have somebody with you.
Right, right.
For that head you got.
Right, right. Right. And when you pray, stand up, look back toward the audience, and pray in a loud voice. See? Sure. But really, I teach Sunday school. I'm running an experiment in Sunday school. I got Sunday school students who go at it just like that. Have you ever been to Sunday school to do that? Come to my class. See? I'm teaching Sunday school teachers in my class. I even wrote my material. How you like that? See? I'm in there, you know, as much as I'm there, I'm in there. And so I feel that we really ought to be in there when we're in town. But I have no intentions of going to seed at any age. And those dear people back there where I am have that potential. Out of my church last year, we brought 17 people to this conference and next week.
And we didn't have anything to do it.
60% of the teachers in my church are what would call themselves navigators under their breath, yet the word's never mentioned except when I'm introduced as a staff member. It infiltrates the whole thing. We've got Sunday school teachers and department heads that can bring a devotional and just share the word. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. That's what I believe you'll do. Okay? Often I observe what appears to be a negative attitude on the part of the navigators to the church. How do the navigators perceive the church? I don't think any navigator has any negative toward the church. I'd like to have some time with him. Any staff man that has any problem but toward the church, I'd like to have some time with him, or Pete can have some time with him or something, see? You know, the church, if the pastor has a problem, we'll work with that. But we're not going to tolerate staff with problems, you know. It appears naffin' often to contrate on people with leadership or potential and miss the opportunity to minister to those with special needs. Could you comment? I sure can. I purposely keep one or two people in my ministry influence that I have no intention of mounting to a hill of beans. Did you hear me? Did you hear me? What did I say?
Well, you keep a couple of losers around.
Right.
Thanks, John.
No charge. No charge. No charge. No charge. Why do I do that?
They're probably ministering to you somehow.
Man, you've been there, haven't you, man? You know what? I honestly don't deserve to pick out any, quote, bright boy. I don't deserve it. The only thing, only quality I have is I haven't quit. Other than that, I'd fail every case. I haven't quit today, that is. I quit last week, but I joined again. Really. And so if a navigator is, quote, trying to pick out the bright boys, that navigator does not have the vision and he needs help. And what's he doing hanging around church trying to pick out bright boys out of church anyway? Did you hear me?
Yeah, but what about looking for that 2 Timothy 2:2?
I come up with my quota. But I have found that God has to pick them. Harvey Cox, when I invited Harvey Cox to my home, and he was around the home, one of the navigator executives, and real, he's my best buddy, he said, John, do you think that Harvey's the kind of guy that we really ought to invest in? Well, those of you who know Harvey know his long string of people that he has on the mission field, you know. So I just find that it I have both. Yes.
I just want to comment on that. That it's like going out, like Samuel went around with trying to find a new king to replace Saul, and he looked at all of David's brothers and all. This must be the one. He said, no, I'm not looking at the outside. You got to look at the heart. Sometimes all a parent lose or needs is someone to pat them on the back, take them under his wing, and help them, and turn that man into a winner. And it's not that man that does it, but it's just the encouragement he gets and the work of God in his own life. Because I was in that boat. If you knew me 8 years ago, you'd look at me and say, no, this guy is never going to pan out.
Yeah.
But God is, a guy took his wing, and there's some real friction times, but God is really going to work through all that.
And I have guys like service guys and enlisted men at my home and real sharp businessmen. An enlisted man does everything except eat off his knife, you know, and he's a businessman and he slops up his food. And I'm hoping this businessman will ask me later, you know, is this the kind of guy I'm reaching? And I'm going to tell him, yeah. What kind of guys are you reaching? Jesus said, go out in the highways and hedges, and if it didn't come from the hedge, I never saw it. Well, if you eat out of the hedge, I never saw it. You know. Oh, I tell you. How do the navigators select an organ selective staff? We train them. We have a fellow, a girl in our ministry. They are in business, our job, and then we train them. And then as time goes on, if they feel they'd like to work with us full time, then we invite them, or they express a desire, or we give them that opportunity. They know what they're doing because they've been raised up in it. Not all that different than Pa raising up a son in the business. You say, well, do you recruit guys from Bible school and seminary? Not really. Why? Well, why don't you build a brick house instead of a wood house? I just decided to do it this way. You know, we decided to do it this way. You know, is this best? I don't know, really. I'm sure we could recruit some fine young men out of seminary. That would be fine. But we do it this way. We raise our own. And it, by the way, it cuts down problems. Fantastic. Relationship with the church, parachurch, the navigators. How do they relate? What about community ministry? How do they work? By the way, folks, you had people before you had the church. God didn't start off with church. He started off with people. Those 12 disciples and Jesus never wasn't First Baptist of the Corner. They were doing a fantastic evangelistic thrust before we ever had deacons and all such as that. Paul pointed deacons. Deacon didn't point Paul. So people is the thrust. Our great-grandchildren and great-great-great-grandchildren is going to see these monstrosity buildings out of east Oklahoma City. The millions and millions are being invested, all borrowed money. And we grew 1% as a denomination last year, we Southern Baptists. We dream of these great monstrosities. Down on our street, Kelvin Street over there on Meridian, what, 15 acres, 10 acres, downtown? 150 people. They used to be big church. What happened? Well, the people moved out to 122nd. What should we do? I would sell it to some investor and join some other group. You know, you see? Comments? And by the way, another thing. I'm an ordained Southern Baptist minister. I was saved in the Southern Baptist Church. But when I got to the fleet, I couldn't find them people. And honey, for 4 years I didn't find them people. And then it began to dawn on me, the mooing herd, all they know about churches is, oh yeah, they used to build churches with spirals, but now they build churches flat. That's all they know. That's all they know. Why is the fundamentals of ministry not provided earlier for involved NAV lay people, for example, after 5 years. So, I don't know. Why are the navigators not better known within the church? Because it became apparent that we, when I told some others I know attended church, had never heard of the navs, that I was coming here. Primarily, until recent years, we didn't work in the church. We worked outside the church. We worked in the fleet. We went on the highways and hedges. We were down on the beach. We were, you know, primarily. Only recently, in the 2007, we worked in the church. So that's probably. What do you tell a young person who wants to serve the Lord, how he can know he's in the will of the Lord? How do you tell a young person who wants to work with the navigators?
Yes. To serve the Lord in that.
To serve the Lord in the navigators. He ties in with the closest navigator representative, and this navigator representative will help him, orient him, and the door is wide open. We need a lot of folks on the staff, off the staff. Because we don't recruit out of seminaries is not because we don't need staff. Is that we just don't recruit our seminaries. That's all. We need staff, but we decided to raise our own. But we're open to anybody that wants to work closely with us, or if he don't work closely with us, we'll work with him. We join either way. Where do you see the navigators heading the next 20 years? I don't know. What key changes do you see occurring in the next 10 years in the Navigators as a result of the new leadership? I have faith to believe that we have built in checks and balances. Human nature don't change. Superstars come and go. It's the troops that take the invasion, not the general. And I am pretty close to the troops. And the troops are in good shape. They're in good shape. Out in the grassroots are in good shape. Where I am, where I go, where I visit. So I would have every reason to believe that if the troops have any say at all in selecting who's going to rule over them, we should be strong in the years to come. And the new leadership, if they listen to the field, they'll keep their job a long time. I've trained 3 field directors already, and I've only been home 6 years. 3 bosses, you know. We hear a lot about you, Roy Robinson, and Lauren. That's not me, I hope. But not as much about any other of Doss' original ministry. Who else on the Navigator staff of the early ministry team, and why so few? Well, a lot of them are dead. You're not going to live forever, you know. Let's see. But the real answer to that is Doss never intended to raise up an organization when he started. And so that all that bunch, Jim Downing is the only staff member of that early bunch that ever came on the Navigator staff, and he didn't join the staff till Doss died. Jim joined in 56. He and Doss were negotiating to come back. He was going to come on the staff. He just retired. So, see, philosophy, Philippians 2, 3, and 4. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Jesus came not to serve. What did Jesus come for?
Not to serve.
Not to serve. What did Jesus come for the first? What?
Serve, not to be served.
No. What did Jesus come for first?
Seeking to save that which was lost.
No, he came not to serve. In Mark, I'm thinking of Mark 10:44. Jesus came not to serve. What did he come for? Say it out loud. But what did he come for first? Mark 10:44. Mark 10:45. Not to serve. He came not to be served. I'm sorry, I let you astray. He came not to be served.
But to serve.
But to serve. Not to be served. He came not to be served. One of Dawson's goals was not to be served. See? But to serve. I believe it's built on that. Bob Hopkins, Will Hopkins, Millie Hopkins, all three are still on the staff. Rod Sargent, Cease Davidson, there's quite a few on the staff, really. Younger guys that knew Dawes, Oz, Jim White, Seifert, yeah. Okay, anything else we quit? Just right for the picture in it.
That's the lunch bell.
That was the lunch bell?
Thunder.
Yeah. Yes,
now, something that's helped me with that one question that you had, why doesn't the navigator have a more of a presence or whatever? I worked for a small firm that for years were doing a job that nobody really knew. A lot of publicity. We didn't get a lot of publicity. And the younger people that worked for me would say that same type of thing. I always used to tell them that, we'd be on a client's site and they'd bring somebody important to them, and and my people would always come to me and say, why didn't they keep up? I said, we're sort of like the Orkin man, you know, that we're here to solve a problem that they have, and we're working behind the scenes. And so, if I had the Orkin man working on in my basement when I invited you over for dinner, I probably wouldn't bring him up and introduce you. But it's very vital that I have him in my home, if I'm trying to have him back again. So that always helps me to put myself in that role as a servant. And not worry about getting
well,
the
thing that thrills me is you meet a fellow like Dr. H.D. McCarty at University Baptist in Fayetteville, and one of the guys was talking to him, and he was helping this young man regarding a relationship with the church, and H.D. told me, hey, by the way, son, I was led to Christ and helped in my early days by the Navigator. You know, he is a product of what we're trying to do. Any other comments at all? Thank you. You've been a good class.